Today, the topic of my talk is taking on individual form. Taking on individual form. All of us have already been born into this lifetime, so we could say that we've already taken on individual form, and that's that. It's done, and there's nothing else to think about this. However, each one of us is still in the state of individualizing because we are seeking to grow in a lot of different areas of our lives. We know we're not complete in the process of becoming. For most of us, we're trying to decide on what we can become, how we can become, exactly how much of our potential we can manifest. We want to be more spiritually evolved, more loving, more successful, make greater contributions to the world, have greater financial security, be happier, make bigger, more positive impacts on the lives of people that we know and those that we love, and on and on. In other words, we're still becoming the individuals we perceive it is possible for us to become. There's another aspect of taking on individual form that I also want to talk about. As human beings, we're constantly seeking to bring ideas into physical form. Writers, inventors, painters, business owners, or entrepreneur wannabes, bakers, artists of all sorts, all children, all adults, are working and playing at turning invisible consciousness into individual physical forms. Look around you at anything that's been created by a human being, and you could see evidence of people who have been successful at doing that. As children, we made our first pies out of mud. We tried to make A's manifest on our test papers in elementary school. We did lots of activities as Brownies and Girl Scouts and Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts to make badges manifest that we could then put on our uniforms. Mothers make food appear on dinner plates, and the list of physical forms created through the activity of mothers and fathers, which includes each of us, right? That's how we got created. Our physicality was created through the activities of our mother and our father. And if you have children, as I do, you're like, well, yep. I can see how I contributed to the creation of their physical manifestation and grandchildren. And that list of things that are manifested physically is virtually endless. I hope you consider this idea. Taking on individual form, that's the idea. So the next time that you make a sandwich for lunch or get dressed to go out to the grocery store or you get the picture, we take on various individual forms before we engage with various forms of matter, energy, space, and time, almost as if we're getting our uniform, our identity, our individuality organized before that encounter. I'm not suggesting that we're putting on armor. We may be putting on just appropriate garments for a given energy exchange experience. But you can see how that can happen. We would take on a different form if we were going to mow the lawn and do some gardening, say, as compared to going to a movie on a Saturday evening. We would take on a different form to go to bed at night than we would if we were going to attend a fundraising luncheon. The idea of taking on individual form starts in this lifetime physically with being conceived. But just think of that. Everything that takes on individual form is first conceived. Look that word up, conceived, in thefreedictionary.com, which I think is a terrific website, thefreedictionary.com, and look at the definitions, and I think you'll agree with this idea that before anything is brought into physical form, before anything manifests, it is first conceived. However, in between conception, say of a baby or of an idea, there are other factors that we need to understand. We already know that every idea that we have, that we conceive, doesn't turn into what we would call individualized physical form. Every time we had a thought, if it manifested physically, we would have a lot of stuff around us, much more than we could actually handle. So there is a delay in terms of time from conceiving a thought, conceiving an idea, conceiving of a project, and its physical manifestation. If we thought and said, I want to be wealthy, we probably wouldn't notice any real change to the individual form of our finances at that moment. Let's say we're looking at our checkbook and we make that statement, I want to be wealthy. We'd look, nope, the balance did not change in it. But that statement, I want to be wealthy, perhaps a deep thinker would already know that they are wealthy in ways that really count. But you and I might be eager to include dollars and cents in our definition of being wealthy. I'm willing to take in the same things that a deep thinker would say, but you know, because I live in the physical world and in this economy and this country, it's very convenient to have dollars and cents in order to facilitate doing things and moving around and so on. So, what are the things that we're likely to encounter in between this conception and physical manifestation of that into that physical form, that individual form? And if we know, will that make the process of manifestation easier and more fun with us? If we know what's going to happen between that first initial conception and, I'll say, delivery, the physical manifestation, if we know what's going to happen in that period of time or space with matter and energy, it might make it easier, might make it more fun, and might make us more effective at it. In Christ Returns, Reveal Startling Truth, Christ says that human babies, individualized forms, and also other animal forms, and even plants, are impacted by feelings of abandonment, insecurity, loss of privacy. Now, I may have misspoken there. I think the driving needs are what plants and animals also experience. I'm thinking these things are probably for higher life forms, maybe primates. Abandonment, insecurity, loss of privacy. So let's say we're going to try to turn an idea that we've conceived in our minds into an individualized physical form. This could be as simple as that sandwich that I mentioned a little while ago, or it could be complex like a book or a workbook or a work of art or a business program or plan or a class that we want to teach, pretty much endless. I think it's very easy to feel all alone, perhaps believing that we're not connected to the energies that we need in order to succeed in the project of bringing that idea into physical form. It's just little old me. Maybe not knowing what will happen next each step of the way as we seek to cause this physical manifestation is going to lead to us feeling insecure. And what if somebody, including ourselves, sees us floundering, doing things wrong, bumping into walls, making mistakes, dropping things, being confused? That could add to our insecurity because we feel more vulnerable because our privacy has been lost and now we're exposed to potential energy forms, criticism, and so on that could make us feel bad. And that criticism, very oftentimes, is going to come directly from us. We don't need other people once we've been trained on how to be self-critical. If we understand that these three energy patterns are possible, or I'll say even likely, when they arise now, we won't be so shocked. We won't be knocked out of balance. When they pop up, we're like, I have feelings of being all alone. Am I all alone? Am I all alone? And if you think at any one moment whether you're being supported or not, I think it can become real clear really quickly. We're being supported. The air is available for us to breathe. Gravity is holding us to the bosom of Mother Earth. food grows out of the dirt or comes out of the water. We're being supported. We're being supported. We never were abandoned. We never were abandoned. We're still connected to the source of our life force, the source of our being. And when we start to recognize that, it's like, I'm all alone. It's not real. It's not real. Maybe perceived, but with practice, we recognize that we don't have to invest a lot in that or have a negative reaction as if it were true. It is not true. Christ in letter one talks about his discovery out in the desert after being baptized, the true nature of God, which he then changes the name to divine consciousness or universal consciousness as a way to differentiate it with this big man with bad attitude up on a cloud, looking to judge, looking to punish, showing favoritism. He said that's a myth. So what he really discovered is that this power, this intelligent energy that's created all things, is seeking to provide for its creation growth, nutrition and nourishment, healing and protection, fulfillment of need, work, survival, with a system of rhythm as well as all encompassed in a spiritual law and order, the law of cause and effect. We reap what we sow. And when we recognize that, it's like, I guess I don't really need to be insecure, because if I understand rhythm, if I know it's going to get dark tonight and it's going to get light the next morning, I guess I can stop worrying about that. If I know in the fall it's going to turn into winter, because that's the natural rhythm of things, I guess I can stop being insecure about that. And other things, if I know, if I provide the energy or actually allow the energy to penetrate my human consciousness, then my growth, my understanding, my awareness is going to rise to the occasion that I need in order to bring this idea that I've conceived in my mind into physical manifestation. It's when we lose sight of that connectedness that we disadvantage ourselves by believing in a falsehood. Christ also talks about in letter 5 about the ego showing up in our personality as the 4 driving needs. So we're going to experience between the conception of an idea and the physical manifestation into individual form of that idea, the impact or the influence or the control or even the pain of the ego using these driving needs to force us to behave in certain ways. And the first driving need is to defend ourselves from criticism, emotional, and physical attack. And you would think, one of the things, I had this cool idea about something that I want to bring into physical form, but, if I let people know, then they might actually criticize me, they might be sarcastic, they might denigrate me, they might judge me, they might ridicule or humiliate me for having this idea to be thinking in these terms, perhaps in terms maybe greater than they were. I had a friend in Ireland use an expression once. He said, the tall flower gets cut. And I said, Eddie, what does that mean? He said, here, soon as you try to rise above the average, above the mediocre, people will try to cut you down. The people who are mediocre will literally go to large steps in order to bring you back down to their level. So it's like, what do we do? I have this idea, you have this idea that you want to bring into physical manifestation. What do we do? Well, in Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich, which was really one of the Bibles of self-improvement, self-development, and other books of this type now provide this advice. Don't share your idea that you've conceived too soon, because that idea is still in a delicate state, if you will, hasn't firmed up in your own mind. You haven't fully committed to it. You haven't energized it, so that I'll say, baby of an idea, is vulnerable, vulnerable to other people's energies. And if you expose it to other people too soon, then they can make comments that are going to end up discouraging us and then lead us to quit trying to manifest that idea. Oh, that's a stupid idea. Nobody in our family ever did that. Oh, that's impossible to do. And you may have heard things of that sort in your life, and you certainly could have heard it from friends or clients that have had that sort of an experience where their peers or their friends or not friends or even family members belittle their attempts to grow larger. The human ego can be brutal to us and to other people because it's going to drive us to defend ourselves. It's going to drive us to come in first in a race of life, take what's best for ourselves despite all other people, and to hold on to what we've acquired, those possessions, the energies that we've acquired, despite the opposition of others. And if we're not doing all these ego imperatives, we're not doing them well enough to satisfy this slave driver, then the ego can attack us, trying to drive us still harder to fulfill what it sees as its legitimate, must be satisfied at all costs needs. It can be scary. It can be scary to us to know that before we start on the process of manifesting an individual form that we've conceived, that we will be savagely scolded by our ego through our own self-talk. As soon as we start, we're like, oh, here it comes. Here comes the whip. Here comes the scolding. Here comes the flagellation. Here comes the pain of that criticism. If that's the case, it's going to be real difficult for us to take action because we recognize odds are this is going to result in painful abuse of ourselves by ourselves through our self-talk. And we're not even talking in that context about people outside of us. It's just us. Nobody even has to know up to that point, and we still can cause ourselves tremendous emotional pain. But being prepared and mindful that this may occur, especially if our histories include these forms of abuse where we've been criticized or demeaned or denigrated or ridiculed or humiliated, that's like, I got a bunch of that stuff in my inventory. And so when it pops up again, I know what's happening. It's going to be easier for us to withstand those assaults because we're going to recognize over time that these are just habit patterns. We inherited them, or we learned them, or we were given them, or we actually concluded them ourselves. And at some point, we're going to, you know what? It's just like noise from the wind. Doesn't really require me to do anything. I can just let it blow itself out. It doesn't have to be controlling commands like we would have thought earlier in our development. If we can, say, realize, as Christ says, that people have to learn through trial and error, then we're doing what is natural and actually designed into our natures when we do something, when we try something, and we make mistakes. It's like, it doesn't mean we're going to hell. It doesn't mean we're bad people. It doesn't mean we're stupid. It doesn't mean anything other than we tried something and we were not effective as we wanted to be. That's it. It's all about facts. We don't need to add misemotion to it. Really, when you think of it, the only way to find the optimum way to do anything, to bring any concept into individual form, is to verify that the other ways are not the optimum way. If you've got five choices in front of you, five potential ways, if you will, and you're like, what's the optimum? What am I going to do? Guess or muscle test or intuit, which is the best? You can try that. But trial and error says that we will try and we will confirm to ourselves of those five choices that this one is the optimum. Now, we don't have to try all five, you know, but just accepting the first one as the optimum may or may not be the best approach to that. For us to, this seems to be true, is that if we can verify that the other ways are not the optimum way, then the way we have remaining is, of that set of choices, the optimum. I assume that this is a normal thing for people to do. It's normal for me, and I guess it makes sense that it would be normal for everybody. Is the only way to know that you found the most comfortable shoe size when you're trying on a pair of shoes is to try one size larger and one size smaller. And then you'll go, yep, I've discovered the optimum. If you have the size and it's like, ooh, the size larger is more comfortable, then you go, well, you know what I need to do? Give me one more size up from that too. And let me confirm that that's the optimum, that's the most comfortable shoe size. And when you do this, and of course what I'm describing here, and we would never use these terms in a shoe store, this is trial and error. I'm trying to discover the most comfortable fit. And that's really what we're doing as we use trial and error. Another set of influences besides these four driving needs is, I see, and this to me occurs frequently, and if we understand this process, I think it makes it life a lot more comfortable, a lot easier for us, because we don't have to go into that self-flagellation. We don't have to hit ourselves for what is. We can accept it and then continue in our process of bringing our conception into individual forms. And I refer to that as the 10 emotional states. If we see those or imagine those 10 emotional states as if they were stepping stones out in front of us, and then you can understand that between the conception of the idea and the physical manifestation, it is likely, or maybe even inevitable, that we're going to touch all 10 of those things at some point. So if you look at it and go, oh, okay, I know that I'm going to experience this, then it's likely that, oh, no big deal. That's empowering as compared to sabotaging. The states are shame, apathy, grief, fear, lust, anger, pride, courageousness, acceptance, and peace. Very easy to remember. SAG, S-A-G, FLAP, F-L-A-P, CAP, C-A-P. Real handy when you're dealing with people to be able to understand what stone they are stepping on and standing in, what energy pattern is permeating their consciousness as they're having a conversation with you, because it impacts our ability to process information, what the world looks like, what we look like, what other people look like, what God looks like, what opportunity or looks like or doesn't look like, and all the emotions that are associated with that state. If we understand it, we're so much more aware, and then we can make better decisions. People starting projects oftentimes feel like, and what kind of projects? Really little ones or even big ones. Climbing Mount Everest is a project. Balancing the checkbook is a project. Cleaning the house or a closet or doing the income taxes or writing that book or starting that business. And a gazillion other examples of projects. When people start, they oftentimes feel shame. They experience shame. Ah, what's wrong with me? I should have done this years ago, or, you know, I should have done this. And that attitude, what's wrong with me, really conveys the energy of brokenness or defectiveness. It's fault, but it's tremendously damaging, powerfully damaging. So people actually have an idea, right? Conceive an idea and are about to take one single step toward the manifestation, creating that thing in individual form, and they experience the pain of shame and quit. They can't stand it. They can't stand it. Because they think it should be easy somehow, or should be comfortable, or should be convenient, or should be instantaneous. But very few things are instantaneous. So they quit this first step. When they step on that shit, what's wrong with me? I'm a jerk, or worse. But that step is only temporary. It's temporary, and how long they stand on that step is completely in our control. It's completely in our control. If we understand that these are the steps that we're going to take as we bring something into individual form, we can relax about it. It's like, oh, you know what? Hey, isn't this like the game of hopscotch, that you're gonna hop on each one of these squares, the numbered squares? I'm trying to remember back what my sisters used to have us do as little kids. It's like, you don't stand there, you hop. Oh, you mean I don't have to stand in shame just because I had that feeling momentarily? No. Hop. You can hop. You can hop to the next one. Oh, that's cool. It is completely up to us how long we stand on that stepping stone, whichever one it is, and whichever one is labeled. You go, wow, that's cool. As we step or hop or jump from shame to apathy, we're going to feel certain things, and you probably can recognize it by the way we talk to ourselves. Oh, man, this is complicated. Oh, wow, I'm never going to figure this out. It's so hard. But gaining knowledge, gaining the energy necessary that will facilitate us bringing the conception into physical form, it is complicated. And if we recognize that this thought process, this self-talk is going to occur, you go, oh, yeah, it is complicated. Bringing something from the invisible into the visible, you're right, it is difficult, interesting, exciting, a lot of different things. It's complicated. You go, oh, okay. So then we hop up one more step to fear of doing it and fear of not doing it. Oh, there I am. Should I do it, or I don't know. All right. And if we take a step backward, we're going to be back in grief. Grief is, oh, I lost. I should have done this sooner. If only. So, yep. And if we stay there and we take a step forward, we're going to be in lust. So we've gone from shame, apathy, grief, to fear, to lust. We will crave the physical manifestation that we've attached our happiness to. I gotta have it. And we will be empowered more than we would have been at those previous steps, shame, apathy, grief. Those things tend to be more like flight than fight to move forward. Once we start getting into craving and the next couple of steps, we're much more energetic, we're much more causative, we're much more willing and able to invest energy in manifestation. So there we are. Got to have this thing. And then lust is followed by anger. I refer to anger as the emotion of stop. We're going to be angry at other people for not helping us learn this process of bringing things into individual form much earlier in our lives. We didn't get taught this stuff. Why not? This is fundamental to human life. But instead of that, we've mostly got rules superimposed on it. Just obey this rule. Just obey this rule. Just memorize this. Just memorize this. Obey this rule. Why? Just obey this rule and don't question. Like, is that going to help me manifest anything? Probably not, but that's not what people were really interested in. So, besides being angry at those people who didn't know and didn't teach us, even if they did know, we're going to be angry at things that we believe are hindering our efforts to create individual forms. The taxes, or the gravity, or bureaucrats, or workers, or fill in the form. A lot of different people can fit into that blank. A lot of different concepts we can be angry at and believe that they are hindering us, holding us back. But anger is more causative than anything that I've said so far. Shame, apathy, grief, fear, and lust. Anger is more causative compared to those states, but only in limited short-duration uses. As a mindset, as an attitude, anger is very unhealthy. It'll burn out the vehicle, cause all kinds of malfunctioning in the vehicle. And as soon as we start to recognize, I think I'm pretty effective at bringing things into individual form. And this lie, I did it all by myself. We're in pride, and that's a dangerous step. It's dangerous because it's slippery due to the premise, all by myself. It's false. It's not. And we take our attention and intention off of learning and growing and ascending, and then the fall can follow that. I say, lighten up. Lighten up and jump. If you hear that voice in your head, I did this all by, I'm so cool by myself. You're going to lighten up and jump into courageousness. Courageousness is more fun, more enthusiastic, more open, more receptive to learning, and others will be eager to be supportive of us. It is that little girl, little boy enthusiasm, seeking to discover and learn, and the fun that's involved in that. And above courageousness are the emotional states of acceptance and peace. In letter two, Christ says that human suffering is based on the twin impulses of bonding, rejecting. These impulses are how we maintain our individual form and how we bring other conceptions into individualized forms. Just think, if there were no rejecting, everything would be one form. If there were no bonding, there would be no form. So the energy necessary to shape an individual form requires rejecting certain things and bonding with other certain things. You're you. You're not your table, and you're not your computer, and you're not your shoes. You go, oh, yeah. I'm not my car. I'm not my bicycle. I'm not my pen. Oh, yeah. Okay. So those energies are individualized forms. Got it. So certain things are us and certain things are not us. Giving our attention to the energies that we want to add to the individual forms that we want to manifest will be more effective. This is the idea that it is better if we bond with the necessary, I'll say, elements, the necessary items, the necessary energy patterns that we want to be part of the physical form that we are bringing into individual state. It'll be more effective if we focus our attention on that. What do I add to the cake I'm making? What do I add to the sandwich I'm making? What do I add to the business I'm designing? What do I add to the painting I'm painting? What do I add to... You get the point. And it is those energies that we bond with and add them into the creation that we've conceived and now are bringing into individual form. It's going to make us a lot more effective. It is better, and frankly, we're going to like it a lot better, to create what we love rather than invest our energy in create what we don't love and what we don't want. That choice of physical manifestation, that bringing things into individual form, we're going to do it with our attention and intention. So now, are we going to be adding into that form the characteristics that we love, that we want to bond with? Or are we going to be adding in the things that we reject, we don't like, we don't want? Very simple. It's a simple question. Not always easy to make the decision that is most life-enhancing. But it is our choice in this process of taking on individual form. We are creating things through our thoughts, our feelings, our words, and our actions. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from letter 8 in Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. There, that sounds like a physical manifestation, bringing things into individual form. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.